everybody. Welcome to a brand new episode of the SmackDown Summary here on Inside the Ropes. My name is Kenny McIntosh, joined as always by Sandra Ruth, Wesseldijk Reinstein. My back is fucked because Steve Gunn couldn't be bothered to get a proper bed, so I'm medicating myself with vodka. Happy New Year! Hi, Sandra, how are you?
Hi, Kenny. I'm all right. You know, vodka's always helpful. Nothing can ever go wrong with self-medicating, right? That's what I've always heard.
We are now, Sandra, on January the 3rd, 2019. Took all my might to not say 1999. Took all of my might.
It's so confusing, though, isn't it? Like, it's so confusing living in two different timelines. It's ridiculous.
Because I swear. Now, here's my thing, right? We will get to this tomorrow. Sandra, don't say anything, because I want to keep your thoughts, right?
Okay.
Have you watched Retro Raw yet?
Not yet.
Okay, so here's the thing.
I know what happens.
I watched it back yesterday. And I think it's maybe one of the greatest shows Vince Russo's ever done. In terms of a couple of the narrative stories, right? Like, for example, if DX are not that likable, I think they do good stuff with DX story-wise, right?
Mm-hmm.
With various members of the group, I think the Shawn Michaels thing is dealt with very well. I think it's pretty obvious, you know, the kind of, there's nuances to it. The Mick Foley stuff's brilliant, blah, blah, blah. However, unfortunately, tied within that show is one of the five worst things they've ever done in company history.
Oh man, I don't even know what you're referencing, so I'm kind of intrigued.
So I'm just hopeful that, like, look, you don't need to think it's the greatest show of all time, of course, but like, there's so much good stuff on it from the people you like. So I would just say, going into it, prepare yourself with Terry that, like,
It's going
to be bad, right?
Gotcha.
It is. But what I think will be good about the conversation, you know, you've heard about this, right?
Yes.
Okay, so there is a miscarriage angle.
Yes.
And what I'm curious about, and I think it will be a really good conversation for us to have, is...
I hate that it's not the only miscarriage angle I've heard about in WWF.
I mean, to be fair, the other one's so ridiculous that it's not really... Like, you wouldn't even take it as a serious angle. Whereas this was like... So, I think going into maybe what might be a better way for us to deal with it is, okay, well, let's go into it thinking, what were they trying to do? Like, what's the outcome? What's the actual goal? So, like, with LOD 2000 and the Hawk thing, even though it didn't work, we know the idea was to create friction between LOD that ultimately will end up with Hawk and Animal back together, and the hope is that they will be more over than before. Whereas that is not what happened, but that was the goal.
The entire
goal, right?
Opposite of that is what happened throughout that whole debacle.
But what I was going to say before I got off into that 1999 tangent, I'm so excited to cover.
I'm glad that you warned me that this was the Terry episode, because I didn't know. Like, I mean, I know the Mankind stuff, and that's all I know that happens on this episode of Retro. I'm glad I know that going in.
Yeah, well, because I was watching, I was going, okay, I'm sure I remember this being a pretty good episode. I was talking to Jimmy Miller about it, and he was saying, this episode is so good. And I think in terms of the DX stuff with Shawn Michaels and the stuff with DX kind of beginning to maybe separate off into doing their own things, and the thing with Mick Foley and his long-standing thing with Vince, and all that kind of stuff together, I think is done super well. Like, really, yeah, really well. And that's the majority of the show. But, you know, the miscarriage is there. And I think the thing that's so bad about it is that it's treated so seriously.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to cover that tomorrow when we record for Retro Raw. But what I was going to say to you initially was, it is January the 3rd, 2019. We're 3 days into the year, and there's already been so much fucking news. So
there has been. It's crazy. It's crazy how much is happening.
We have All Elite Wrestling, who are now a thing.
And it's officially announced, and that's so exciting.
Thank fuck that's something I can now talk about and anyway. So yeah, glad it's out
like
in the open.
Not like scouring social media to make sure you don't say something that's been posted.
Yeah, I can't say things. So, but then the other thing is, so obviously now the news has, well, the rumors have come out. I don't know 100%, so, but the rumors have come out that Barry Bloom is involved, who obviously I know personally, and he has some very high profile clients who are rumored to be involved, like a Chris Jericho. Goldberg has today all of a sudden followed the All In and AEW accounts
what
on Twitter, so you know, Because the thing is, with Goldberg, what's pretty interesting is, you know, he's a guy who's 50, he's 51, he's the most intense man we've ever met in our lifetime.
Oh my gosh, yes.
However, he's like a jacked legend guy with a lot of cachet that nobody else has taken advantage of. And I think it's pretty interesting that, like, a company who are going to be starting up, like, if you're going to make a play, I'm just saying, if you're going to make a play to use one legend, Goldberg's not the worst choice to have.
He'd be a great choice. I think he proved when he came back to WWE. I mean, I was the type of person who was ready to just hate Goldberg's run in WWE because I was like, who's this legend guy coming back to da-da-da-da-da, you know?
Yeah, and
he was awesome. Like, I loved what Goldberg did in WWE. I think it couldn't have gone better for him. Like, I fell in love with him as a superhero who did what he wanted to do for his kid. Like, if it's working for someone like me who doesn't have nostalgia for Goldberg, then, I mean, that says something to his charisma and his star power and his intensity. Oh, my goodness. But, I mean, Goldberg's a commodity for sure. So that would be very, very interesting. Like, I'm so excited for the possibilities that All Elite Wrestling could bring. Like, I know that there's a difference between producing one show and then producing a company with, you know, multiple shows and possible television deals I've heard rumors about. I mean, there's a lot going on, right? But I think that these guys are all very, very smart, and they've done such good things with, you know, being the Elite. And obviously All In was a resounding success. It was fantastic. It was amazing. And, you know, every show that they produce is not going to be All In level, but I think that they have a chance of doing something really special here. And it's another option for people who aren't in WWE or who aren't signed to another company. And I don't know, like, more competition and more people working in the business is good for everyone, I think. So I am so excited for what they have to bring.
And, you know, it came out today as well, and I said this on Twitter 5 minutes ago, and I'm not blowing smoke, but, you know, Brandi Rhodes is the chief brand officer for AEW, and, you know, I spent a couple of days with her last month, and what I can say from the conversations we had over, like, a two-day period, she gets wrestling a lot more than I think people maybe give her credit for. And I think she is going to absolutely nail that job, and she is going to, like, make sure, like, brand is important. Brand is big, and you need somebody like her. You know, you've got Cody's the EVP, you've got the Young Bucks that are there, but, you know, they're going to be dealing with a lot of other stuff. And you need somebody like a Brandi who, you know, look at Brandi, what she's done since she left WWE. She's created a persona for herself as a wrestler. She has joined a reality show and been pretty successful at that as well. So I think that she's a great shout to have that. And also the thing is, because you've picked her, who else could want that to succeed more than the person who is, like, you know, lifetime attached to the other person who is desperate for it to succeed? Because, like, I, you know, Meltzer said it, All In changed the game for TV companies being interested, for different things, and I think it's really exciting. And whether you're a WWE fan or somebody who shits in WWE or whatever area you want to go on, like, it's great for everybody. Like, I'm a WWE fan first and foremost. I've not made any bones about that, but I am so excited about this, and it really is, like, without any hyperbole, this is the biggest thing that's happened since the death of WCW.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I think, I mean, like, and I wasn't around for when TNA started up, but this, like, when TNA started, did it feel big? Because, I mean, I know it's hard now because, like, you know, we watch Impact and it's like the dying gasps of Impact trying to cling on the Pursuit channel or whatever.
Well, I mean,
but
the weird thing is when TNA started, so if we go back, like, they tried weekly pay-per-views, which, I mean, the idea, you know, Jerry Jarrett's got a book that you can buy on Amazon. I'm going to try and find the name of it again because I always forget it. I've got it somewhere stored away because I move so many times a year that I can't keep up. But he wrote a book, The Story of the Development of NWA TNA, A New Concept in Pay-Per-View Programming. And it's like £10 or $10 on Amazon. Like, pick it up if you get a chance because it's Jerry Jarrett, this longtime Memphis promoter who decides that there is a gap in the market of the sort of 3 to 5 million viewers of WCW who don't have any programming anymore. Nothing's aimed at them anymore. So his idea with Jeff Jarrett was that instead of paying $39.95 for a pay-per-view, you would pay $9.99 every week for a show. And, you know, maybe 1 week you miss it, or whatever, if you don't have the money. But, and I understand giving it a go, but it didn't work. And then they went to Fox Sports, I think, first. Then they went to Spike and all that kind of stuff. And they all, I mean, I think there was a period in 05, 06, 07 where they felt pretty big. But the problem was they'd already had the kind of stank of the weekly TV and then the, you know, the name like NWATNA. Like,
yeah.
Whereas this is a promotion who are starting based on a bunch of guys together who were really cool and actually were proven commodities to draw in wrestling, who then managed to band together and sell out a 10,000-seater arena for a pay-per-view.
So, based only on like their own hard work and social media hype. I mean, obviously they had some companies that ended up sponsoring them and whatnot, but I think the cool thing about All Elite Wrestling and, you know, what happened with All In is that it was a bunch of guys who got together and were like, no, we're going to screw the system. We're going to do something that we're not supposed to be able to do. And they did it better than anyone could have imagined they did, right? So it's cool that they're starting this on such a high and on such a buzz. And I mean, it's a lot to live up to, but I think there are a lot of possibilities, and distribution now is very different to when like TNA started, or, you know, Ring of Honor coming to prominence, that kind of thing. Like them kind of starting with the social media hype and like all of the marketing that they're doing. I think, I don't know, everything kind of seems to be working in their favor, and I hope it's really big. Like, I'm not under any illusion that All Elite Wrestling is going to be competition for WWE in the next 2 years and they're going to take over WWE and WWE is going to go out of business. Like, that's never going to happen. WWE is a huge company, but I think when you think about competition for WWE, you shouldn't think about taking over like overall market share, but you should think like, for wrestling fans, it's giving us more options, and WWE obviously is going to see them as a threat. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if WWE is trying to sign up people to keep them out of All Elite Wrestling, to keep them out of that buzz, because that's a share of merchandise money, that's a share of pay-per-view money. You know, people might spend their network subscription on All Elite content instead, you know, that kind of thing. Like, so there is competition, not in the sense of like taking over WWE as a company, but like taking away some of their market share and also providing more opportunities and places for people to work. I think it's awesome.
And the other thing is, you've got to understand the metrics of who this is. This is the Bucks, Cody, Brandy, Tony Khan, all these people. The Bucks have got to be aware. If they went to WWE, they would never be. Look at the tag team divisions of WWE. You know, like I was sitting earlier on today.
Dire.
Because I was sitting earlier on today doing my. Some people have actually asked me to do this, so I'm not trying to make it sound like I'm important, but like people said, are you doing your WrestleMania card yet? So I'm trying to get my WrestleMania card going, and I was looking at the SmackDown tag teams, and for a second I was like, maybe Sanity will be, and I was like, no, it'll be the Bar and the New Day and the Usos, like, because that's what we've had, and it's just kind of there.
I mean, we've had a little bit more of a resurgence with the Club and Sanity lately, but yeah, I mean, like,
you know,
a little.
I mean, like, there's been people there. But, like, the Young Bucks are not going to come in and change anything. They're not going to make big money. Or if they do make big money, it's really just to keep them from going anywhere else. Cody was someone who, time and time again, came up with other gimmicks and other gimmicks and other gimmicks, and they didn't let him go. Brandy's someone who was there who continuously came up with ideas, and they never let her do anything. These are people who have a point to prove. Not that they hate WWE or anything like that, but they, look, I grew up, and it's hard because, like, some, I think some people listening to this did grow up with it and some people didn't, but, like, I wish that everybody who didn't experience it could, for, like, a year, experience the sort of channel surfing thing from the 90s. It was insane. Like, the idea,
I guess,
like,
the closest I can come to it is I remember channel surfing with Saturday morning cartoons. Like, so not with wrestling, but Saturday morning cartoons when I was, like, you know, 6 or 7 or whatever, and I would want
to
watch. You know, yeah, like, I would want to watch California Raisins and Garfield or whatever. I don't know what was on at the same time. Like, Ninja Turtles and Looney Tunes, that kind of thing. So I had to make a choice and sometimes, like, switch back and forth during the ads and stuff like that. So, I mean, I have a concept of what that's like. I didn't do it for wrestling.
But the thing about, so, like, in the UK, obviously the US, it was just Monday Night Nitro versus Raw. But in the UK, it was, like, 9 p.m. to 11:30. For some reason, we couldn't get the full 3 hour Nitro. We got 2.5 hours. Don't know why. So we got 9 to 11:30, but then Raw's on 10 till 12. And because WWF, you got the pay per views, and WCW, you didn't get the pay per views in the UK, you would primarily, most people would swing towards the WWF because you could go and see the pay per views every month. They toured over here. It was easier to follow. But Even me, I remember me and Jamie, we'd be on the phone and it'd be like, okay, so the ad break comes up, first ad break comes off for Raw, what's on Nitro? And sometimes you'd stay on Nitro, oh, I need to watch Raw again. It's then maybe one of you'd watch Raw, the other one watch Nitro, and you need to check what's going on, and da-da-da-da. So, like, that was really fun. And I know that AEW are not going to be going head-to-head, but what I mean is that the idea that eventually there's a choice of whatever it is that you watch, whether it's you choose Monday Night Raw or Tuesday Night Dynamite or whatever it is that you watch. Yeah. It's exciting. And there's some people who are choosing to just say this is nothing. And I just think those are people who are uneducated, because I've been covering wrestling as a career for 5 years now. And I promise you, this is different. Ring of Honor have been around for what, they debuted 2002. And they've had points where there's been a little bit here and there, but, like, you know, that I'm convinced that the ROH New Japan show for WrestleMania weekend sold out because of Omega, the Bucks, and Cody. I'm convinced of it. I don't know what you think about that, but I think that's why.
I mean, I agree. I think, like, Ring of Honor has some good things going on, but a lot of the stuff I would tune in to see in Ring of Honor is stuff having to do with the Bucks and Cody and, like, Hangman Page. Well, I mean, he's more in New Japan, but you know what I mean? Like, it's a lot of those guys. Like, that's why I would be interested in Ring of Honor. And there are other people there that I really super love. Like, I actually kind of want to start watching Ring of Honor some for, you know, like, Villain Enterprises and stuff. I'm super into, but that's still kind of an offshoot of the Elite situation, right? Like, I'm obviously a big PCO fan, absolutely love him. I'm a big fan of Brody King. After seeing him live a couple times, I'm like, I really like this guy too. So I, you know, like, there are things I'm interested in Ring of Honor, but All Elite just seems a lot more interesting right now.
Yeah, 100%. And, you know, I put
I love that there are so many options though, isn't it great? Like, it's a great time to be a wrestling fan right now.
And it's funny because I put the tweet out literally 10 minutes ago where I said, I'll tell you this, no smoke blown or BS. I spent 2 days with Brandi Rhodes last month and she gets wrestling, what fans want, and in her role as chief brand officer, she'll work 24/7 to make that brand a success, and it's in safe hands on all fronts. First response to that message, or that tweet, sorry, was the Session Moth, Martina. And she said, the stuff she said about women's wrestling has stuck with me. My girl.
She's
looking out for women's wrestling as well, which I'm not saying has to be the be-all and end-all, but it's an important part of wrestling that, you know...
It's an important part of it that, like, Ring of Honor and a lot of those companies don't do all that well. And even All In kind of fell victim to putting all of the women in one match, right? And then you had Brandi's interference and, you know, involvement in other matches and Penelope Ford being there with Joey Janela. But, you know, just putting all four women into one fatal four-way is just kind of like, okay, well, I mean, it was great, it was awesome, but it'd be nice to see multiple women's storylines, multiple female performers getting highlighted. And I think that's something that is going to be very important to Brandi, and I think that bodes well. That's one of the things I have kind of a critical eye on when it comes to the All Elite situation, because I'm curious how they're going to treat women's wrestling. And I think with Brandi being such a big part of it, it gives me hope.
I mean, I guess the best thing I can say without really saying anything too much is that I feel like Brandi feels the way you feel from what I have deciphered.
Excellent. That is great to hear. And didn't they just sign Britt Baker? Didn't I see that was a thing?
I think so, yeah. I think they did.
Which is awesome. I love Britt Baker. She's great.
So, I mean, exciting stuff. And then tomorrow's Wrestle Kingdom, for fuck's sake.
I am going to watch Wrestle Kingdom live tonight.
Wow, okay. Well,
I'm really excited.
If you're up for it, you can join David and I are gonna review it on Sunday if you want to get in on that.
Yeah, I might do.
So we're gonna review that. Bring the McCutch to the Patron. Patreon.
I like it.
Not Del Rio.
not Del Rio.
So there's all that. Plus there is, of course, the first SmackDown of 2019. The sad news is, of course, the passing of Gene Okerlund, mean Gene Okerlund. So I wanted to say very quickly, so when Robert and I started Inside the Ropes in 2012, we were trying to get all these interviews, and I remember sending a Facebook message to Gene Okerlund, and he responded to me and gave me his email address. And, like, for whatever reason, that was the one that really freaked me out. That was the one that was, oh my God, Gene Okerlund. And,
like, now I have this man's contact information.
Yes, and then he, you know, so we we messaged back and forth, and then we eventually did the interview, I think in June of 2012. Anyway, and we did it. I'm actually trying to find the emails right here right now while we talk.
That interview just from being a listener.
Yeah, he would respond to emails with a G-O as his tagline. And he said, "Kenny, I'm clear. Let's count on July 5th at 10 a.m. And I was like, "Okay, great. Talk to you then." And he was like, "Here's my number, blah, blah, blah." I said, "Okay, we'll talk to you then." And then he said, then he wrote, "Kenny, get your coffee or tea and we'll talk in 15 minutes. Meaner." Meaner.
Meaner. He's such an adorable man.
And then we did the interview. He gave us 90 minutes, which is insane. And then there was one point where Robert popped him because he was talking about Lord Alfred Hayes getting knighted or something, and then like Robert made some sort of like joke about him pumping the Queen, and Gene Oakland started laughing. And then he did like a thing where he was like, "Kenny, it's been so long. Robert, you owe me money." And that was the opening to him doing an interview. And he was just the best. And I don't think we were thinking about doing another one. I can't remember if we did do another one. We wanted to do a WrestleMania Memories thing with him. I don't think we got around to it. But yeah, that 90-minute interview is one of the ones where I'm just like, I keep that all the time. We've put it up on YouTube, actually, on our YouTube channel, youtube.com/InsideTheRopes. But yeah, I was pretty bummed when he passed away because he was so good. Like there's so many, like the SummerSlam 89 thing where he's interviewing Rick Rude and the sign falls down and he goes, "Fuck it," live on air. Or like there's one.
Is this a $200 an hour job?
Yeah. And there's one where he's interviewing Ric Flair and Woman's there and she's like, "Hey Gene," and he's like, "I think you're very attractive, but I don't like who you hang around with." And like it's so funny. He's the best. So
And the thing is, like, I didn't grow up with Gene Okerlund, so I've seen a lot of this stuff in retrospect. But, I mean, I've watched a lot of interview clips and compilations and whatnot, especially a lot of the stuff with Randy Savage. And, I mean, Gene Okerlund was great because he was a personality. Like, he was definitely a person, right? He wasn't just a robot. He wasn't a Dasha. He was a person. But he also never made it about himself. I think the closest we have today is probably Renee Young in terms of interviewing, like, who feels like a character and also can blend into the background when need be. And I think that's a really tough balance to walk, right? Like being a personality on a show, but not being the focus of something because it's not about you. It's about the star and the story that you're trying to get over. And Gene Okerlund was the best. Like he was so, so good.
And what's funny is, you know, you're not the first. I saw Karan on Twitter had said as well that he had watched Gene Okerlund. So I think the idea that a lot of people who didn't watch when he was around have the affinity for him that people who did watch when he was around really tells you how good he was, that people who weren't watching still love him just as much. So
yeah,
I will go to the grave wishing I had a cocktail with Gene Okerlund.
Oh my gosh, that would have been amazing, right?
So good. And before we continue, I need to just talk about something that's sweeping the UK: the vegan sausage roll. Right? This is fucking everywhere, right?
I've seen this.
Okay, so here's the issue.
I don't understand why it's such a big deal.
Here's the bigger
issue. I think it's great that there's a vegan sausage roll.
I think it's great for vegans that there is a vegan sausage roll. However, let's talk about the bigger picture, ladies and gentlemen. Greg's sausage rolls and scotch pies are fucking dog shit.
True.
Their sausage rolls are like sausage rolls who have become terminally ill, and you're having a bite as they are like Tom Hanks in Philadelphia with AIDS. The Scotch pies are horrendous. Like, so as a meat eater, they are fucking diabolical. So if vegans want to have a similar experience, go ahead. Like, more power to you. What I would like, as someone who, I will always eat meat, but for my vegan friends out there, I feel like I'm trying to do a political campaign, but like for my vegan friends out there, I wish you could get part of the glory. And Sandra, when you next come over, we're going to get you one of these.
Okay.
An old school local bakery sausage roll where the end of the sausage roll looks like a cat's anus. It is fucking
it's the way it has to be.
Thick. And when you take one bite, you are literally covered in pastry. That's what a sausage roll looks like. Greggs are so bad at doing Scotch pies that they can't keep the circle top within the circle. They are dry. They are shit. So, like, for me...
I think I've only had a Greggs thing once, and it wasn't great.
They're so crap. And people are like, oh, my God, Greggs are... I'm like, go down to your local fucking bakery butcher fucking place and be like, hey, can you find me a vegan version of this? Because that's what vegans should have.
Because even, like, the Roland Square I had at the train station was better than Greggs.
They're horrendous. And people are like, yay, more Greggs! And I'm like, they're fucking terrible!
So really, the problem is not that Greggs has a vegan sausage roll. The problem is that Greggs are shite.
Oh, so because like somebody, poor Lloyd on Twitter, who was just trying to be, he wasn't being like a dick or anything, but he was like, you know, why do vegans really need stuff that tastes like meat? And I'm like, because they used to like meat, and they still want stuff that tastes like meat, but without animals being killed. That's the point. Like, I get it. Like, I 100, listen, vegans out there, my favorite food is macaroni and cheese. So I get where you're coming from. Totally understand you. I'm never going to be on your team, but I'll support you from the different part of the area that I'm in. But you know what? If vegans feel better that they have a Greggs vegan sausage roll, I'm happy for them. But if I was campaigning for vegans to vote for me, I would want them to have a good vegan sausage roll, not a Greggs one.
That's fair.
So SmackDown. Before we start, sorry, very quickly. How was your new year? Talk me through.
My new year is the most boring story in the entire world because I worked until just after 11 and then I came home and then I toasted New Year with Mr. Sandra. This is the first year we've been together in years where we were actually together at midnight. So we were like, hey, pour some Osti, toast, cheers, New Year, awesome. We had the New Year's Eve, like the Times Square ball drop thing happening on the television. And then we realized we didn't know who any of the pop culture stars that were on it, except for New Kids on the Block. Those were the ones we recognized. And
I mean, I don't know if they really are still pop culture people, to be honest.
Well, no, but I'm just saying, like, that's the only names that I was recognizing. And Jenny McCarthy was on it, too.
Were you watching New Year 2019 or WrestleMania 10?
Right? I'm just saying, like, I only really recognize the pop culture people from the 90s, apparently. And so then we turned that off immediately because I was like, let's watch something better than this. And then we just kind of, like, watch TV. And that was it. And then New Year's Day, I basically just slept because I have been working too much. So I don't have a very exciting story for New Year's, but it was pleasant enough. How was your New Year's?
Well, there is a culprit that should be held to account here.
Okay.
His name is Steve Gunn.
Uh-huh.
That's who he is. And what he decided to do, he's like, oh, come to London for New Year, Kenny. I was like, yeah, that's great. It sounds like a great idea. So here's what happened. We've been dating for about 5 months. And he's going to hate me telling this story, but I don't give a fuck.
I'm so excited to hear this story.
So we are on the fucking way to his friend's party, right? I'm like, oh, this will be fun. We get off the train station, I get my cargo, I get my little Red Bull sugar free, I get some of our liter bottle of vodka and pour it in. And then we walk past this pub and he was like, oh yeah, me and my friends went to this pub last year. I was like, oh cool, that's fine. And he went, yeah, oh, it was a bit of a night. I was like, oh, what do you mean? He said, oh, I had to fuck this woman. I was like, what?
What?
He was like, yeah, this woman like forced herself on you. You got raped in a pub? Well, no, like it wasn't really rape because like... Like, I mean, I guess I technically went through with it. I was like, right. And you think now's the time to tell me this? Like, I'm trying to get my buzz on for New Year. And he was like, listen, I'm just telling a story, which proves he can't tell stories. So we're on our way to the party, and he was like, oh, yeah, and she might be here tonight. I was like, what? Right. Okay, fine. Listen, I'm cool. That's fine. So I got very inebriated, I drank a lot, and his friend Mandy came along, and so it was a night, it was quite the evening for me, and I got very drunk, and other things. So it gets to New Year, gets to midnight, and it's all, I realise it's all couples, and me and Steve Gunn, and then there's this girl dressed as Audrey Hepburn. a bigger version if Audrey Hepburn had, you know, really let herself go. And but I was very aware that she was on her own, right? So I was like, well, I don't want midnight to hit and for her to just be, you know, watching everyone else get off each other. So me being the sort of selfless individual that I am, Sandra,
mm-hmm.
thought, well, I won't...
Magnanimous to a fault.
Thank you. I thought, I'll not, like, go in for Steve Gunn, tongue-wise. I'll like, make a little hug gesture to this lady.
It was her, wasn't it?
And as I'm hugging her, I'm going, it's fucking her, isn't it?
Was it?
Yes! It was fucking her! So she's there with her fucking huge tits. And then she's awkward because she's like, oh, the guy I almost raped a couple of years ago is here with the guy. And then I'm here going, I'm feeling really awkward because the last woman he ever fucked was you when you raped him in a fucking room. So I then decided to speak more to Steve's friend Mandy and have more drinks and blah, 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 blah. And then I decided it was a great idea to just tell a story about fisting. And then I decided to get on the phone to my mother. The best bit of Steve Gunn doesn't know about this part. I got on the phone to mom and I was like, Mum, there's a problem. And she was like, what's that? And I was like, Steve Gunn fucked a lassie and she's here. And mom was like, oh my God, that's disgusting, Kenneth. Is she attractive? I said, no, she's not. That's not the point. But like, the point is, I'm feeling uncomfortable. And she said, that's disgusting. And then she went, my friend Liz is here. Hold on. Liz, Kenneth's fancy piece has got a woman that's pumped him at the party. So she's on the phone. Liz is on the phone. Oh, Kenneth, tell me all about it. So I'm telling her. Then Steve Gunn comes out dressed as Kurt Cobain. Unbeknownst to him, I go, Steve, say Happy New Year to my mum. But he's also been speaking to my friend Mandy and drinking. So he doesn't want to get on the phone, but unfortunately he does. And that's about 2:30 in the morning. Now, I then said we should leave. I said we should leave. Nobody listened to me. So then, 7 a.m.
We're still there.
And I, in a cry for help, in the person's flat who it was, I just lay on the ground. I just lay on the living room floor. And Steve,
sometimes worse comes to worse and you just need to sleep.
And Steve just went, I think we should go. So we leave. And then we get in a taxi who only drives us like half a mile for whatever reason. And I'm like, you disgusting bastard! So I'm gone. And then we get in another taxi. And
who
then,
are you yelling, you disgusting bastard, at? Steve Gunn or the taxi driver?
The taxi driver who only drove us half a mile and then made us get out for no reason.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
Steve Gunn deserved it as well, just saying. So we then got in a taxi, and then I, of course, left my phone in the taxi. Mm-hmm. And then I started essentially weeping in Steve Gunn's bed about my phone. I was like, I'm not going to get able to get a Patreon, and I'm not going to be able to upload the podcasts. And I've got all my wrestling contacts. I'm not going to be able to text Cody anymore. And there's no better type of text him than with the contacts. So
I'm gone at this point.
And then I fall asleep at like 7:30. And at 12:30, I wake up. And I hear Steve Gunn on the phone. He has tracked down the taxi driver. He has got the taxi driver to agree to drive 90 minutes from his home to a middle area in London, where Steve Gunn will also travel 90 minutes to meet the guy and then get my phone. You know the worst thing about it, Sandra?
What's the worst thing about it?
It was a complete fucking power play. He
did
this. Of
course it was.
Because he knew that once he did that, I had no fucking power left in the world. All the power I could have gotten from that party and his fucking vaginal secretion experience, I could not get back because he had went across country to get me my phone, so he had the power.
And didn't he also make you mac and cheese that day?
The following day, but still. Steve Gunn is a dirty, sweaty genius.
I think I'm in love with him.
So, that was my new year. So SmackDown...
Far more interesting than mine.
Oh, how I would have given for your new year. So, Let's talk about SmackDown. So SmackDown takes place on New Year's Day. What a segue.
I know.
Let's go straight into it. We kick off the show with the New Day. They do some comedy stuff. Big E is in like a diaper or a nappy if you're in the UK. Xavier Woods is in a suave suit. Kofi Kingston is one. They're all going to be in the Royal Rumble match. Big E starts doing Steiner math. They call him out on it. He's got pancakes in his shorts or diaper. They plug Cena's Bumblebee movie, and then they announce that Jeff Hardy and Samoa Joe's going to be taking place. I actually thought the New Day's opening segment was a ton of fun. What did you think, Sandra?
I thought it was a lot of fun, and Big E Langston was a very oily baby. He just looked like he enjoyed what he was doing so much, being the New Year's baby. And it's been a while, I think, since we've had someone be the New Year's baby other than like Hornswoggle or the Big Show, right? So this is a change of pace. And it's very possible that we've had other people do it and I just don't remember. So I don't know. But yeah, I thought it was fun. I mean, it was a lot of standard New Day shenanigans, but in a really fun way where they're just kind of going out there having a laugh. And, you know, it's a cheesy holiday episode and I want some cheesy holiday shit. So it worked for me. And then I did kind of like that. They're like, no, our New Year's resolution, we're trying to eat better. No carbs. So no more pancakes. And Big E Langston just cannot handle this. Right. Like he, of course, is going to eat the pancakes and has them stuffed in his diaper because why wouldn't he? I don't know. It's ridiculous. It's bonkers. It's the kind of thing I love in wrestling. And isn't there going to be. Are people qualifying for a fatal five-way match? Is that why he was holding up five? I can't remember. Like, I know there was a moment where...
So Jeff Hardy, Samoa Joe was to determine the last spot in the fatal five-way.
The last spot in the fatal five-way. That's what it was. Because it gave me this adorable moment where Big E holds up his hand and he's like, fatal five-way. And he's like, oh, five. And he gets so excited about the number five. And that always warms my heart because it's a throwback to three ain't enough, man. I need five. Big E Langston of old. And it always makes me happy. So yeah, I enjoyed this opening segment a lot.
It was good fun. And then Jeff Hardy and Samoa Joe had a match. And I'm kind of in two minds about it because I actually thought the match was really good. But like... I feel like if Jeff Hardy is having a match with Samoa Joe because Samoa Joe was like riling him up about his past abuse, that maybe it could have been wrestled in a slightly more aggressive style. Any thoughts?
Yeah, I guess I'm just so ready for this to be over. And I mean, after last week's disqualification situation that we had with Jeff Hardy, right, where he actually got angry at Samoa Joe and got himself disqualified for beating him up too much, you'd think that it would have been more aggressive and it would have been more like Jeff Hardy guns a-blazing, coming out here, raring to go and, you know, murdering Samoa Joe. And that really isn't what it was. I thought it was pretty good. The match continued through the ad break and the screen and screen, and I kind of, you know, I was watching it, but it's just really hard for me to get invested in this match when I hate the story so much and I just kind of want it to be over. So, I mean, I think the guys wrestled really well, but I just want them to be doing different things and that made it difficult for me.
Also, why did the referee stop the count on the outside when Samoa Joe came back in?
Don't they do that though? Like you break the count. That's how you break the count, is going in and out of the ring.
No, because if Samoa Joe came back in, he would have won the match, right?
See, it's situational. I feel like this is where we need a consistent set of rules, Kenny, because sometimes a performer can break the count by going into the ring and then going back out of it, because then the count starts over for both people.
Mm-hmm.
And then sometimes it doesn't work that way. I don't know. It's confusing. I don't really remember the spot that you're talking about, but
so there's a spot on the outside where Samoa Joe puts Jeff Hardy in the Kikina clutch, mm-hmm. and then as the count goes up to about eight, Samoa Joe drops it and gets back in the ring, and the referee just stops the count.
Ah, yeah, because one of the performers got back in the ring, so the count has to restart.
Which sometimes happens and sometimes doesn't.
This is the problem here. But Samoa Joe winning.
He reapplies the Kikina clutch in the ring. Jeff Hardy is just basically passed out, so Samoa Joe wins to advance into the fatal five-way.
Which I think is the right decision. I would rather see Samoa Joe in the fatal five-way than I would see Jeff Hardy. Because I don't know, like I really like Samoa Joe as a performer. I know Finn Martin and I disagree on this wholeheartedly. I think Samoa Joe is great. And I think that some of the storylines he's been put in have not been great. But his delivery of them makes them more interesting than they should be. Even the story with Jeff Hardy, I think his delivery has been great. It's just the story's pish. So... that's the problem. But Samoa Joe is a great performer and I like his matches and I like his charisma and I like everything about him. So I'm way more into Samoa Joe than I am into Jeff Hardy, who basically is kind of a nostalgia act of a nostalgia act at this point, because Jeff Hardy comes out and like he does his dance and I'm Jeff Hardy thing. And then he's also doing Delete, which is really nostalgia of a gimmick that his brother made famous. So,
which is funny because when I do my WrestleMania card in the next week or so, I actually think that the key to Jeff Hardy's longevity is going to be the Broken Hardys together.
Yeah.
And I think that may be what we're going to see. But Joe does advance. It's going to be Joe, AJ, Rey Mysterio, Mustafa Ali, and Randy Orton in a five-way in the main event. We see a replay from last week of the Vince McMahon-AJ Styles segment. We get Vince and AJ talking about the five-way. Really weird hearing Vince McMahon go, Samoa Joe's in there now. This is great. And I'm like, oh, Vince has put over Samoa Joe. I'm fanboying out everywhere. So they're talking, the trophies in the background. AJ enters. He says, maybe I should apologize for last week, but I won't because you provoked me. You wanted the real AJ Styles. You can watch what happens tonight. Or, you know, maybe you want that right now. Shane and Vince stand up. Vince tries to hold Shane back. AJ leaves the room. Shane says to Vince, do you really want to see the AJ Styles? And Vince is like, absolutely. And Shane said, careful what you wish for. And what I liked about this was, why would Shane say careful what you wish for?
Because Shane has faced the real AJ Styles in the ring. Shane has gone toe-to-toe with AJ Styles. There's continuity there.
Not just that. What happened when AJ Styles didn't have anything to do at WrestleMania last year? He put Shane McMahon through a car window.
Yep. And I think that's the AJ Styles we want to see again, right? Like, the outcome of the Fatal 5-Way was not exactly what I wanted to happen. But if we can see some sort of character shift with AJ Styles, I think that'd be great. And I like that they're using Shane McMahon's history with AJ Styles to make AJ Styles seem like a more interesting performer. And Kenny, my brain doesn't know how to handle the fact that I think the McMahons are actually being used effectively on SmackDown Live right now.
Yeah, I mean, this segment was pretty great.
Like, Vince McMahon showing up every once in a while and actually putting over characters and not, like, I think it's what I said last week. It's kind of clicked for me that I don't like when the McMahons are lording over everything and making themselves the story. But this feels like they're actually highlighting other characters and being involved in other character stories to build up the other wrestlers on the show. That's how authority figures should be used, in my opinion. That's what makes William Regal so great. You know, like, that's what has made Paige so great recently, is that she highlights a lot of the other feuds and gets involved only to kind of put the pieces together. And the star power of Vince McMahon is very real. Like, I can't deny that. So when Vince McMahon is talking about AJ Styles and talking to AJ Styles and wanting to see something more from him, and Shane McMahon is like, hey, I can call on my common, you know, or my past experience with AJ Styles and make this story seem more continuous and more cohesive, that's kind of great. And I'm hesitant. I'm cautious. I don't want to say, like, oh, more of this, please, because then we're just going to get so much more McMahon stuff, and that's not what I want. I think they found the perfect balance of it right now, and I'm not opposed to seeing them on TV if this is how it's going to go.
I was watching this with Steve Gunn, and we were watching the segment, and midway through, I just kind of turned to him and went, I'm so glad Vince is back. Like, I just feel like I feel more comfortable when he's, like, around in this way, because For whatever reason, when Vince puts over AJ Styles or Samoa Joe, I feel like it means 10 times more than any other McMahon doing it. And I like that. I know, you know, we'll get to it with the main event outcome, but I think that because the Vince thing has happened with AJ, I'm more okay with the outcome. I'm not saying, like, I know some people aren't happy about it, but I think that they're doing something that's different, and they're involving Vince, and I think that's, I'm willing to see where it goes.
I think if we see a character change in AJ Styles, I will be more okay with that than I am currently.
One of the new things they're doing on Raw and SmackDown is kind of having graphics tout in the city that they're in, like Pittsburgh, so I thought it was pretty cool.
Yeah, I like it.
Looking forward to see what they're doing in Grand Rapids, just showing Sandra's house.
yeah, just show my condo. I'm curious what they'll do, though, for Grand Rapids, if they'll show the Calder or the Da Vinci horse or something. It'd be kind of cool. We have stuff.
Up next we have...
we do! Roz coming here in February, so I guess we'll find out then.
Rusev and Lana are being interviewed by Dasha Fuentes in the ring. Rusev said that when the title made for the greatest Rusev day of all. Talks about pride in the US title, how good he looks and smells. Starts a Rusev Day USA chant, Nakamura shows up, kicks Rusev, and then Lana jumps on Nakamura's back. And then Rusev kicks Nakamura, who kind of lands on Lana, but not really... So, but let me finish this and then you give your... Because on social media, you kind of nailed this. Rusev kind of tended to Lana. Nakamura runs over and Kinshasa's Rusev. Nakamura picks up the belt and drops Rusev. I like the angle with Nakamura and Rusev, but can you explain to everyone what the problem is with the Lana part of it?
The problem with the Lana part of this is that Lana is a wrestler. And I know we don't think that she's necessarily
the loosest
best
sense of the word.
She might not be the best wrestler in the world, but she is a wrestler who has competed in ladder matches and has competed in matches, and she can fall down for a living, right? So her being lightly brushed by Shinsuke Nakamura, like, he didn't even fall on her. He just sort of, like, threw her off his back, basically, is what happened. That should not be a fatality. Like, she's sitting there, and the fact that she's wearing a sparkly, adorable, like, sequin business suit-looking thing again does not negate the fact that she still falls down for a living. So I don't understand why it's treated as, like, oh no, Lana has been killed because she fell down from a man brushing her aside or something, right? And like Rusev's going over to her being like, oh no, my poor wife, my damsel in distress who is sitting over here and has been brushed by a man and has fallen down and will never get up again. Like, she is a wrestler. It's gonna be okay. It's the same thing that we saw with Brie Bella and Daniel Bryan earlier this year when, you know, Brie Bella got like pushed by The Miz or something like that, and it was just like an ultimate fatality. And I know there are a couple of people that, you know, I like and respect who got in touch on social media and we're like, you know, oh, it's just situational selling, or it's, you know, like, this is just how wrestling works. And I mean, Ollie even said there's a difference between, you know, when you're having a match and your body's prepared for punishment, but if you're not ready and you're caught by surprise, it might take longer to recover. The same way Rusev was out cold from a Kinshasa when in a match he could be back up and hitting the move quickly. And I get that. Like, I get that situational selling is a thing. Because like Jamie Kennedy's too said, you know, it's one of those weird wrestling tropes, less to do with male and female argument, more to do with situational selling. But I guess I disagree in this particular instance, because we've seen WWE have a pattern of this, like when men and women are involved in the ring together. Like, situational selling kind of bugs me anyway, because I don't like when moves are just fatalities outside of a ring, and, you know, like, they'd be fine in a ring. But I mean, I get the whole preparedness and whatnot, but it seems like WWE does have this issue that, like, if a man brushes against a woman, then she is just dead and a damsel in distress and can't do anything, right? And it's also frustrating in situations like last week with Carmella just kind of standing there as Daniel Bryan is beating up R-Truth. Like, Carmella is a trained fighter. Like, she is a wrestler as well. So why wouldn't she be jumping on Daniel Bryan? Why wouldn't she be attacking Daniel Bryan? Why wouldn't she be helping R-Truth? Because that's not something that the intergender wrestling, like, problems with Mattel and whatnot, like, that doesn't preclude Carmella going after Daniel Bryan. Women can hit men in the world of WWE, right? She should have been stabbing Daniel Bryan in the face with her heels. Like, that's what should be happening. But instead, she's just like, oh no, I'm just a valet in this situation and I have no idea what to do because I'm dressed like an elf and have forgotten how to be a wrestler. And it's just something that we see a lot more commonly in WWE with, you know, the male and female dynamic. And it just drives me insane every time. So yes, Lana is a wrestler. Falling down once should not be killing her. They treated it like when Big Show ran over AJ Lee, which I still think was overblown.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's funny. We watch Retro Raw a lot, and there's a lot of problems with Retro Raw and what they do. But I think that one of the things they do pretty well is that it's pretty consistent with what characters do. And mm-hmm. one of the things that Lana, that bothers me is that, like, see if it had been a case of, like, they could have done this much better, where Lana would have been knocked out, but they did it in such a way where, like, because I read the spoiler of what happened, I was like, oh, I wonder how they do it. And then when I saw it, I was like, why is she down from this? Like, this is a woman who competed in Money in the Bank match last year.
Yeah.
Badly, but still competed.
She did okay in that one.
Oh, come on. So, but the somebody had replied to you, and it was my favorite response. It was like, you know, well, you know, when I wear my glittery pantsuit and the breeze passes me, I often fall down.
Yeah.
And that's what it is. It was lazy. Really, and look, I know they're kind of tied because they can't have man-on-woman violence, but there's got to be a better way to do this.
And I thought the angle was good.
I just thought the part was boring.
Yeah, and well, and the thing is too, like, if this is where some of the intergender restrictions kind of hurt storytelling, because if Shinsuke Nakamura had given Lana at Kinshasa, right, like, if that's what had happened, then I would understand her being down, because that is his deadly, deadly finisher, right? Like, her falling down off of his back is not a deadly, deadly finisher. So if she had been given a Kinshasa out of the blue when she's not prepared for it or dressed for it or whatever, then fine. Like, I'll accept that that's situational selling, but I'm not going to accept it if it's just like, oh, I got bumped and I fell down. That doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah, so it was pretty bizarre. Up next, we have a continuation of the Jimmy Uso, Naomi, Mandy Rose, and Sonya Deville angle, where we've got Mandy Rose trying to get between Jimmy Uso and Naomi. Get Naomi versus Sonya here. Before the match, Mandy Rose takes off her t-shirt and has an Uso's t-shirt underneath, which Naomi's annoyed about. And then there's a point where, like, Mandy Rose is like, look at what I sent your husband today, and it's a picture of her in a towel. And I'm like, have you seen her social media? Which is, like, far worse. Or not worse, right? But, like, far more naked. And that ended up allowing Sonya to get the distraction, get the pin. I've got to say, you please wax lyrical about Mandy and Naomi, but I've got to say, Sonya Deville, as much as I like you, you need to change that finisher. It looked like it hurt you, not Naomi. Like, I was watching it and went, oh, fuck, Naomi got a reversal. Oh, no, she didn't. Sonya Deville hit something. It looked very, very bad. So I would prefer if like, it looked, whenever she did that kind of weird DDT thing, it looked like it hurt Sonya, not Naomi. And I think that if you're going to get bigger in the company and you're going to get into these big kind of matches that are going to be for titles or whatever, you need to have a better finisher. I do not like the finisher. It bothered me.
The finisher's not great. I think Sonya looked good, though. Like, Sonya and Naomi...
She looked great up until the finish. She looked really good up until it. And she looked good in that Battle Royal the other week as well with Asuka.
Yeah, I think she's doing really well and she can be an absolute star. So, like, the positive things about this segment, right? I like that there is a secondary women's story. I liked Naomi versus Sonya Deville more than I thought I was going to like Naomi versus Sonya Deville, because I don't necessarily always love Naomi's matches. But I think she's trying to bring it too. And I think that's good. I am all about an angry Naomi, because I think happy, dancy, smiling Naomi is fun, but an angry Naomi could be far more interesting. But oh boy, are there a lot of problems with this segment. I hate this story so much, Kenny. I hate it. It reminds me very much of Retro Raw, and a lot of the parts of Retro Raw I don't like. Like, I know that in Retro Raw that we'd probably just be calling Naomi a jealous bitch and calling Mandy a Jezebel whore, and the women would be the problem. And, you know, women be jealous and crazy bitches, right? But, like, so we've made some tiny victories, because they're not presenting Naomi as a jealous, crazy person, even though she's coming off as way more insecure than I think she should in this storyline. I mean, if you watch Total Divas and if you watch Mixed Match Challenge and, like, any of these things, right? Like, Naomi and Jimmy Uso are fine. Like, they try to always kind of manufacture contrived drama of, like, I want to get an apartment in Atlanta. And Jimmy Uso is like, we live in Florida. And Naomi's like, I'm going to get an apartment. And oh man, our marriage might be over. It's not. Like, it's contrived drama for the sake of a reality television show, right? Like, they have seemingly a great marriage. And, like, in canon, they're fine. Like, they're always going to be together and they're great and they're lovely. So I don't really understand why Naomi's even giving Mandy Rose this much time of day. Like, she's pissed, and she has a right to be pissed, because Mandy's definitely being a dick. Like, what she's doing is not okay. Like, going after someone and being like, I'm gonna steal your significant other from you, that's not cool. So, you know, and her, like, wearing an Uso shirt, okay, fine, whatever, you crazy person. Like, Jimmy Uso is not gonna leave Naomi for you. And then, like, sending Jimmy Uso a picture of her in a towel when you're correct, Mandy Rose's social media is a lot more revealing than Mandy Rose wearing a towel that covers most of her body. And so, I mean, the whole thing is just, it comes off as lazy and bizarre and inauthentic to me. And it's just like, I don't understand why Naomi is acting so insecure. I don't understand why Mandy Rose even wants Jimmy Uso in the first place. It's not like she just wants Jimmy Uso because that's the way to get at Naomi, because stealing your man is the best storyline they could come up with for these women. Like, why? I just, none of it rings true to me, and I am not a fan.
I mean, the issue is Mandy Rose isn't a very good wrestler, so you kind of have to try and come up with other stuff, but you can come up with other stuff that's better than this.
She's not terrible, though. It's not like she's Sable.
I mean, she's basic.
Yeah.
But the problem is, when Sable was around, it wasn't like when Sable was around, there were Charlottes and Beckys and Askas.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas there are now, so... And, you know, they want to have her around. So, I mean, I'm with you.
Well, like, and I think Mandy Rose, like, she can be a valuable character. And I think her delivery of some of this stuff is fine. But again, it's like, the story is so bad.
Oh, it is bad. Anyway, up next we have Randy Orton doing a backstage promo about the five-way. Then we have Samoa Joe doing one. And then up next, John Cena makes his entrance. He's got a towel that's got his own thing and then an Ellen DeGeneres Be Kind to One Another thing on the other. He talks about 2018, buying a ticket to WrestleMania, shouldn't have had the beers before his match.
Which, by the way, that's just irresponsible. Who do you think you are, Shawn Michaels?
Children's book, living in China for 6 months. And basically said he's still here. He wants to have someone come out and challenge him. But he says, you know, let's have someone more original than, you know, saying I should get a haircut or say I should be dropped faster than Nikki Bella dropped me. Is anyone going to come out? Becky Lynch comes out. Cena applauds her. Becky says, you know, how does it feel to expect a man to come out instead? You get the man. She says, you know, you personify everything that the company was. It's time for someone to step up. And then she said, and if you have a problem with that, Nikki Bella won't be the only woman to drop you this year. So I'm curious, what do you think of the interaction with Cena and Becky? And was the use of the Nikki Bella-John Cena relationship okay in this instance? If so, if yes, why? If not, why?
So the Nikki Bella thing didn't really bother me so much here because John Cena brought it up first. So it wasn't just Becky trying to get a zinger and be like, I'm going to bring up the fact that you used to be with Nikki Bella and now you're not. Because John Cena brought it up already, it was kind of fair game. You know, it was like, yeah, you're going to say something to me about my relationship with Nikki. And, you know, and Becky wasn't even saying like, oh, you're so pathetic because Nikki Bella dropped you. She's like, no, I'm also going to drop you. I think that's part of it, too, is that Becky was actually putting herself over in the comparison to like, you know, I'm going to drop you the way Nikki Bella did or whatever. You know what I mean? Like, it's a really subtle distinction. But for some reason, it didn't bug me here the way it bugs me a lot of the times when, you know, people just come at Nikki Bella and are like, you couldn't even keep John Cena around. You know, it's not mocking Cena.
Is part of it because with women, a lot of the time, they are made to be their focal sort of like faculty seems to be you have sex with men, whereas with John Cena, he's so much more than that that you can it kind of bounces off of him. So it's not really the same thing. Whereas like Nikki Bella at that point was trying to make herself a wrestler on her own thing, and the Cena thing almost diminished her, whereas bringing up Nikki Bella to John Cena doesn't really diminish him because he's such a huge star and has done so much stuff anyway.
Yeah, I think that's part of it, for sure. I mean, we just watched, you know, Naomi versus Sonya Deville with a Mandy Rose situation, like, right before this segment, right? And that one's just rife with, we are feuding because don't look at my man. Like, my marriage to my husband and me being with him is the most important thing. Like, it reminded me of Jacqueline and Mark Miro and Sable. Like, this whole angle reminds me of Jacqueline and Mark Miro and Sable, and I don't like it. I think the difference with Becky Lynch and John Cena is like, yeah, that's not the main point of Becky Lynch's insult. It's not like, you're less of a man because you couldn't keep Nikki Bella around. And also, yeah, John Cena does have a lot of things going on, and he articulated them in this segment. And I think there is a different dynamic when a woman says something to a man than when a man says something to a woman, like, based on the history and the context of the company. And also, just in this instance, it was basically Becky being like, hey, I'm a badass and I'm gonna drop you. So that's kind of why it worked for me. But I loved this interaction, Kenny. This was amazing. I did know before the show started that Becky Lynch was the one to kind of answer John Cena, because I'd seen a picture of her doing the you can't see me thing to John Cena with his terrible, terrible hair. But I don't know, this interaction was just like everything I could have hoped and dreamed for, right? Like, Becky Lynch interrupting John Cena, who's legitimately biggest mainstream star in the company right now. Like, The Rock is not here anymore, and John Cena's barely here anymore. But like, for Becky Lynch to be able to interact with John Cena, and then for John Cena to treat her seriously when they were having this conversation, this is something like my tweet about this got added to a Twitter moment, and it was interesting to like hear from not my normal like Twitter interaction circles. Some people are like, but she's not a man though, and I'm like, wow, no shit, Sherlock, you're super intelligent for pointing that out to me, thank you. And all the people who also pointed out to me that wrestling is fake, thank you, I had no idea. But you know, I said on Twitter, like, the key to the segment for me is that John Cena treated Becky Lynch seriously. He didn't mock her. He didn't be like, why are you saying you're a man when you're a woman? Because that's real stupid. Because that's the kind of thing that John Cena does when he gets in verbal battles with people, right? He belittles them and he makes himself look more important. With Becky Lynch, he acknowledged her star power. He basically treated her like the man, you know? And when Becky said, you know, I've not just been going after Charlotte for her spots on the posters and the cups and the souvenir things. I'm going after you too, John. You know, he didn't say, oh, well, you'll never get there because I'm John Cena. He basically was like, all right, step up, bring it. Like, John Cena's been asking for someone to take his spot. John Cena's been asking for someone to rise up. And you can tell that this is a John Cena who knows he's a part-timer, and that's fine. He's fine with it. Like, he's accepted that about himself. I think he's doing it better than The Rock did when The Rock came back, because The Rock was like, I'm never, ever going away. And John Cena's not promising that. He's not promising to be around forever. He's like, no, when I come here, this is home. I also have a lot of other shit going on, and that's fine. And so for John Cena to treat Becky Lynch seriously and to, like, treat her like almost a threat, but, I mean, not like a threat to him, but just a threat to everyone in the company, and acknowledge that she was a big star, was huge for me. Like, he doesn't respect his male opponents that well. So, that I don't know. I couldn't have asked for more from this.
Yeah, I really liked it. I think my only, like, minor complaint is I feel like Becky at points was playing up a little bit that almost seemed insincere. In some okay. of her mannerisms, like, see when she, like, especially at the end of the mixed tag when she was, like, walking up the ramp, I was like, but you're the man because you actually feel slighted, not that it's just like you're having a swagger for the sake of a swagger. So there were little points where I'd have been like, I'd have preferred it to be just taken down a tiny bit, but that's me being very nitpicky, and I'm only doing it because I want to be, like, fair to it.
Mm-hmm. But for and the I most can part, see that. I think that, like, she was the man because she felt slighted, but I think now she kind of realizes that she's on top of the world. So there's been a little bit of a character shift, maybe. And maybe that's why people are starting to turn on her. I don't know.
Yeah, but I mean, I think for the most part, it's still fine. I think she just needs to be careful of the mm-hmm. of the narrative that the character's telling. But I thought her and Cena were great. Cena's hair, what the actual fuck?
I have no idea. So terrible. Like, what is it even doing? And the thing is, John Cena knows it's terrible.
As a guy who has dark hair and looks worse clean shaven, honestly, what are you doing? What are you doing?
It's not a good look for him. It's not a good look for him at all. And especially, like, post-match. It was just atrocious.
Oh, my God. So it ends up that Andrade, Cena, Almas, and Zelina Vega come out. It turns into a mixed tag. We get the mixed tag that was kind of, you know, just, it was basic, but it was fun. And in the end, Cena does the AA to Almas. Becky then shoves Cena out of the ring after his fucking shitty punch.
So his lightning fist.
I thank her for that. And then she gets rolled up by Zelina, turns it into disarmer, and gets the tap out victory. And then as Cena goes to get a handshake from her, she does the you can't see me and walks off. So, I mean, Becky Lynch was a star here, and John Cena, to his credit, put her over 100%.
Yeah, he did. This is everything I could want from a John Cena appearance. This is the best thing he's done on WWE television in maybe years. Like, this is, and without hyperbole, not just because I'm a huge Becky Lynch homegirl, but, like, I thought this was great, him actually putting over someone. There are a few things I really loved about this match. John Cena was in a tag match, and he was not the hot tag. Becky Lynch was the hot tag. John Cena was wrestling for the first time in a while on SmackDown, and the entire crowd was chanting, "We want Becky." And he didn't get hokey about it. He didn't try and, like, take the spotlight for himself. He knows what his role is now, and I think he's being used super effectively on this one episode of SmackDown. I have no idea what he's going to do in Raw. We'll see. But I really like the fact that Becky Lynch was the hot tag. John Cena got his stuff in, right? Like, he got to hit the AA on Andrade. Did he hit an AA? Did he just hit the five knuckle shuffle? I can't remember.
No,
but
he hit the AA, then he hit the lightning punch.
Okay, then he hit the lightning fist. So he got to do his moves. So the people who are there to see John Cena hitting his moves got to see that. But Becky Lynch throwing him out of the ring after that. And then, like, Becky Lynch is so on fire right now that she survived a distraction roll-up, right? Like, Zelina Vega went to roll up Becky Lynch after she throws John Cena out of the ring. And Becky Lynch was able to reverse that into the disarmer, which, A, is a transition that I love. And B, means that Becky Lynch is on top of the fucking world, and I just love her.
She is the queen of the world. It was super fun. It was super fun, as you would say. It was a good time. Now, in full disclosure, ladies and gentlemen, we are recording the rest of this SmackDown summary 24 hours later, because I'm pretty sure that Wrestle Kingdom references may come up at some point as we talk. So,
it could very well happen. And obviously, when we started recording this yesterday, we hadn't seen Wrestle Kingdom yet, but I had to leave to go to my job and work. And so, you know, recording had to be truncated. These are the real life situations that happen in the world of independent podcasting.
So we have the tag match, which was good fun. Then we have, after that, where am I? Get my placing correct here.
I think, wasn't it something with The Miz?
Yeah. So we get the footage of Miz and Shane, and then we get Shane and Miz in the dressing room, or in Shane's office. So Miz basically is talking about, you know, he thinks a team needs to dress together and all this kind of stuff. And then he basically shows a couple of images of Shane McMahon in Miz gear with, like, trainers on. My favorite bit is when in one of them he's topless and Shane's like, is that Goldberg's body?
Miz is like, you've never looked so good. I loved this segment, Kenny. This is so right up my alley, right? I want a makeover show where The Miz gives Shane McMahon a makeover. Like, Shane's still being kind of a dick to The Miz, right? And The Miz is like, no, look, I'm combining your style with my style. And he was all, like, excited and proud to show Shane the makeover options that he had. And then Shane was just like, no. And you could tell The Miz was trying not to look like super, super hurt because this was his pride and joy. He's like, no, you're right. That one sucks. It's terrible. What about this next option, though? And I sort of want to see the Shane and The Miz in matching gear.
Who knew that this was a thing that you wanted to see? The segment was,
what is happening?
It's one of those weird things where it shouldn't work, but it does for some reason. I don't know why, but it does.
I think it's because The Miz is actual magic. That's what I'm going with. That's my theory.
Well, also, you had a good theory about Shane, about how when Shane is involved in storylines, he's pretty good. It's just when he's lording over the storylines that it's a problem.
Yeah, exactly.
So,
And this one, he feels embedded in it, right? And I mean, he's still acting kind of like a prick Shane McMahon, where he's, you know, acting a little bit above The Miz. But that is, like, that's more part of the story than just, I'm a McMahon and I'm in charge of everything.
Exactly.
It's all on The Miz's terms, which I think is important.
Then we have Asuka backstage looking at her SmackDown Women's Championship when Triple H shows up, congratulates her, and asks her, you know, who do you think deserves a shot at your title? And she said, you know, I'll fight anybody because nobody's ready for Asuka. Charlotte then comes up and she says, you know, she would be champion if it wasn't for Ronda Rousey. Carmella shows up and boasts about her title reign, how she beat them both, and I had PTSD that I didn't know I had. Charlotte told her to take her 7-second dance break somewhere else, and then of course Becky Lynch shows up at the end and makes her pitch for being the number one contender, and Triple H said they all make good cases and the McMahons will take it under advisement and let them know once they've made a decision as to who's going to be the number one contender. So I guess, who do you think should face Asuka at the Royal Rumble for the SmackDown Women's Championship, and why? And if your answer's Carmella, I'm hanging up.
Yes, my answer is totally Carmella. What? No, it should not be Carmella. Obviously, it should not be Carmella. Although, I do think it's interesting that Carmella came and said, you know, I have beaten Charlotte and I have beaten Asuka. And she does make a point, right? Like, she has a point and she has valid reason to be in the segment. It absolutely should not be Carmella. Of course, I want it to be Becky. Like, Becky's the one that lost her title to Asuka. She didn't get pinned for it. Like, I would love it to be Becky Lynch, as long as she can still main event WrestleMania with Ronda Rousey. So yeah, like, storyline reasons wise, like, I definitely want it to be Becky Lynch. And it's interesting in this segment too, because I think Asuka actually is starting to kind of own some of these promo segments a little bit better. Like, she just has this charisma that kind of oozes from her that's working for me the way it didn't necessarily earlier on in her kind of English speaking promo ventures. Like, I think she's kind of found a good balance now. I think Charlotte still feels really stilted in a lot of these backstage interview segments. I think Carmella's delivery is really good, but no one believes that she should be the one to face Asuka. And then when Becky Lynch came and kind of, like, made her way through the crowd, it just felt like the atmosphere changed on screen. It felt like a big star had arrived in the segment and she was the man and she's the one who's going to absolutely own everything on SmackDown Live. And I don't know, like, Becky Lynch is obviously the biggest choice. I think, I mean, what do you think they're going to do? Are they going to have, like, a triple threat between Becky and Charlotte and Carmella? Because that seems to be the most reasonable way to go. Like, next week on SmackDown?
Yeah, maybe. I mean, I think Becky and Asuka is the match. For me, anyway, that's the one I think you should have at the Royal Rumble.
Unless they do a triple threat with Becky and Charlotte and Asuka.
They could do.
Like, kind of a TLC rematch situation. Which,
I mean, there's no loser there. For us, like, there's
right.
Oh no, I get really good wrestling. Just Carmella, I enjoy your dance breaks. Please keep them over there.
Yes. Carmella is great on SmackDown. Carmella, I really like her
Now.
dance breaks. Now she is great on SmackDown when she is in a role that fits her character. That role is not champion, and I don't really want her anywhere near the title at this point because that was not a great experiment. It did not go all that well. But I mean, yeah, I think the options for Asuka's challenger at the Royal Rumble, I mean, if it's Charlotte, awesome. If it's Becky, awesome. There are options, and it's kind of nice, and I enjoy it.
Options are nice. So we then have the main event, which is Rey Mysterio, Samoa Joe, Mustafa Ali, AJ Styles, and Randy Orton in a five-way to determine who faces Daniel Bryan at Royal Rumble for the WWE Championship. The match goes about 13 minutes. Everybody kind of gets their shit in at various points. You know, we've basically got, you know, the legends in Mysterio and Orton, AJ Styles, who wants his belt back, Mustafa Ali, who's the underdog kind of new guy, Samoa Joe, who by all purposes really doesn't deserve to be there because he lost like five title matches in a row. So what did you think of this five-way main event? And before, rather than just talking about the outcome, the match itself.
I think the match itself was a lot of fun, and it didn't occur to me until I was actually watching the match that this was four veteran guys, right? Like AJ Styles, Randy Orton, Rey Mysterio, and Samoa Joe have all been doing wrestling for a really long time and are very established names. So it was four very veteran, venerated performers and Mustafa Ali. So for me, the interesting story of it was Mustafa Ali kind of coming back. And I wanted Mustafa Ali to win this match so badly, Kenny, like so badly. And it made me invested in it as it was going. And like, I mean, all of the guys in the match, I mean, I'm not a fan of Randy Orton. You may know this. But I think everyone performed really, really well in the match. I mean, Orton, there were times that Orton looked like he couldn't really be bothered to be there. But Rey Mysterio looked awesome. The 619 is always so hokey. And, like, I want to not hate it as much as I do. But the way he sets it up where people just have to, like, lie in the ropes forever. Like, I hate that he has to springboard and run all the way across the ring. I don't know why. It's just, it's one of those moves that just kind of bugs me. But I mean, that being said, I like that Rey Mysterio is using the 619 to set up a splash now. And like, that's just such a better finisher than just like, I hit you in the face with my knee. And there were a lot of near falls in the match too, that I definitely bit for. And I was kind of yelling. I was like, no, you cannot win. Like, I think there was an RKO spot at one point, and I was like, no, you better not, you motherfucker, Randy Orton, you are not going to be facing Daniel Bryan at the Royal Rumble. I will be so angry. So yeah, I was invested in the match. I thought the wrestling was really good, and I had a performer that I was super, super invested in. Unfortunately, that performer did not win the match, but it helps you to, the match had stakes, you know what I mean? Like, and that helps me kind of get invested in it. What did you think of it?
Yeah, I really liked it. I thought the match was good. I thought everybody looked pretty decent. Everybody wanted a title shot. So I know that you were disappointed about who won, or Mustafa Ali not winning. And what I thought was interesting was that, like, I mean, I'm of two minds, because there is the argument that Mustafa Ali and Daniel Bryan could have been a match that you did because the Royal Rumble's not being sold in the WWE title match, so I get that that's there. But at the same time, I think that what some people are saying is, well, you know, what, there goes them shaking things up and giving us something new. And I'm thinking, well, wait a minute, like, those are two different conversations. Like,
those are two different conversations,
because
for sure.
Same, Mustafa Ali didn't win and you wanted him to win, which is absolutely valid to have as a kind of, you know, that would be a new thing, that would be something different. Like,
and I'm a big fan of his, so I want
exactly.
him to win things.
But at the same time, it's like AJ Styles, Daniel Bryan last month had like a killer match. They've not anywhere near done it too many times. So it's not like if this was Daniel Bryan versus, I don't know, Big Cass. Like, yeah, okay,
oh,
but
gosh.
Oh, what are you doing?
Remember
like,
that?
Like, oh, this is rubbish. But like, we're really at a stage where we're complaining that we're getting AJ Styles and Daniel Bryan as a match. Like, yeah, I just, so for me, I like, if this had been AJ Styles getting the title shot without the stuff that he's doing with Vince and the kind of new elements, I'd probably be a lot less into it than I am. But I think because of that, I'm willing to go with it more. Plus, like, I like the idea of Mustafa Ali, like, almost like if he doesn't get a title shot now, like, he's not been beaten then, really. So he still had a case.
True.
Like, it's not.
And
like
he still has somewhere to go. Like, he still has somewhere to rise to. And of course, like, I'm a big fan of Mustafa Ali, so I want him to win the world. And, you know, we always want the best things for our favorite performers immediately.
Mm-hmm.
But there could be a great story in Mustafa Ali having to rise in the ranks, because he came into SmackDown from 205 Live and got put right in the main event scene, which is crazy, right? Like, you don't expect a 205 Live guy to come to SmackDown and make this much of an impact. So I think if they continue treating him like a special thing, then, I mean, you could build to Mustafa Ali getting a title shot, whether it's the US title or the actual WWE title. I think there are some really good stories to tell, and it, like, this might protect Mustafa Ali, if I'm thinking in terms of like my logical brain and not just my heart that wants him to win. It might protect him from getting too much too soon and being kind of like at the top of the mountain where the only place to go is down. So it probably is a good thing for Mustafa Ali in the long run. It's just, it's a match that I would have really, really liked to see. As far as the AJ Styles stuff that you're saying, like, I agree that the added element of like Vince trying to get in AJ Styles' head and trying to fire up AJ Styles does potentially make it more interesting. I don't know that we've seen a real change in AJ Styles. Yeah, I think we've seen some on TV. Like, he seems a little angrier and he seems a little bit more fired up. But you mentioned when we were recording yesterday / earlier in this podcast that AJ Styles is the one who threw Shane McMahon through a car because he wanted a shot at, you know, being at WrestleMania or whatever, right? That's the AJ Styles I want to see. And I don't know that we've quite gotten there, but if that's what we get to, and if that's the kind of like fire that we see from AJ Styles and the kind of passion that we see from him again, then, I mean, then I don't have any complaints about AJ Styles versus Daniel Bryan. I know the match is going to be great. That's not my complaint. It's like, you know, we have seen AJ Styles and Daniel Bryan a bunch of times, and I just WWE tends to do matches one or two too many times, and I just don't want them to get there. It's one of the things I would kind of like to let it breathe. But I mean, the match is going to be amazing. I'm definitely looking forward to it, and I hope there are some new added elements.
And there's still time for us to get Mustafa Ali and Daniel Bryan on one of the two pay-per-views between Royal Rumble and WrestleMania.
Oh, that's right. There are two, aren't there?
So, you know,
are they trying to kill us?
Kill you with content.
Kill us with content.
I thought this was a really fun episode of SmackDown, apart from Sonya Deville having one of the worst looking finishers I've ever seen. But apart from that, big old thumbs up from me.
Oh, yeah. This is a big old thumbs up for me, too. I loved it. I thought it was great. Except for the Naomi Mandy stuff that I am just not a fan of at all. But, you know, I mean, every show's going to have its ups and downs, I suppose. And it's not so egregious that it ruins the entire show for me. And like I said, even though I hate the Mandy and Naomi storyline, it was kind of cool that women were featured throughout most of the show. Like, it was a while before we saw a segment that didn't have a woman involved in it. And I really like that shift. I think that's super cool. Like, I complained a lot last week about how there were no women's matches and there was only one stupid like women's backstage segment where Naomi threw a shoe. And I think they made up for it this week, even if one of the stories is kind of trite.
So before we go, we may as well just very quickly talk about something current. So obviously, we're about to give away a result of a Wrestle Kingdom match. So if you haven't seen it or are trying to avoid finding out who won what match, turn off now. But Kenny Omega did lose to Hiroshi Tanahashi in the main event.
He did.
So the big rumor is that WWE have given a fantastic offer. Had given out a fantastic offer to Omega.
Really?
There was one of the figures banded around was, and I've not heard this from indie reputable yet, so, but there's like a $3.5 million offer out there, which will obviously be a multi-year deal. But I guess my question to you is, having just watched Wrestle Kingdom, what do you think of Omega in WWE? Is that something that you could see happening? Is it something, do you think he would work well there? Is there a match that you would specifically want to see him have? Because he's kind of this wildcard guy who has seemed to always be not against WWE, he's always seemed to be the guy on the other side. So what do you think?
I mean, I don't want to see Kenny Omega in WWE. I really don't. It's not that I don't think he'd be amazing. I think he would be amazing. I think he could definitely be an AJ Styles type performer, where if they get behind him and they give him the ball, then he could, you know, he could be champion for a long time. He could be champion as long as AJ Styles and maybe be a better champion than AJ Styles. I don't know. But it seems like Kenny Omega is the kind of guy who could have awesome matches with so many people who are in WWE. Like, Kenny Omega versus Daniel Bryan would be incredible. Kenny Omega versus Samoa Joe, I think, would be great. You know, Kenny Omega versus AJ Styles would be fantastic. Kenny Omega versus, I don't know, like, honestly, Kenny Omega versus Roman Reigns, if and when Roman Reigns comes back, would be a great match. There are a ton of matches I would love to see, but I don't know if I want to see all of those matches within the framework of WWE. And it's not me shitting on WWE. Like, you know, I like WWE. I'm maybe not as hardcore passionate about WWE as I am about other promotions, but there is something to be said for, I mean, WWE wrestles a different style than somewhere like New Japan or Ring of Honor or wherever else. And I think a guy like Kenny Omega, I want to see him have the creative freedom to kind of go and do what he can do. And I don't know, it's just kind of a creative gamble whether they would actually let him be Kenny Omega in WWE. I don't think that they would. And I'm very hesitant about wanting to see him in WWE. Like, I kind of figured he'd go with the All Elite guys. Is kind of where I figured he was going, but it's interesting. It's an interesting thought. And I mean, he could absolutely take WWE by storm and be the guy there if they let him, but it's all about if they let him, I suppose. I don't know. What do you think about it?
So, I mean, obviously I'm not a kind of hardcore New Japan guy, which a lot of people are, or girl, which a lot of people are. So for me, it's not as, because I saw there was a guy on Reddit today and it was kind of like comical because it was so like a guy just like screaming into his computer about how, like, you know, he's fucking selling out and he did it. And it's like, if we look at the trajectory and the history, a lot of guys in their mid to late 30s do make the jump to WWE. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, it's a very hard style in Japan and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But there's a couple of things that I think make this more interesting, which is, number one, Kenny Omega, like, he doesn't do a lot of shows. Like, if you look around, he doesn't do a lot of indie shows. You don't see Kenny Omega in Grand Rapids or anything like that. Like, he rarely does a show if it's out with the kind of commitments that he has. And he lives in Japan. He likes living in Japan. So he likes his life the way it is. I'm not too sure that he really is the sort of person that's like, oh, I could get another million if I do this. I'm not sure that's what motivates him. But even if that is what motivates him, like, I find it difficult that all Elite Wrestling is starting right now with a billionaire behind it, or behind part of it, and the guy's best pals being in it, that he is going to just not do that. So,
yeah, I mean, I guess I really hadn't even considered him going to WWE. Like, I knew that they wanted him because, of course, they want him because they don't want anyone else to have Kenny Omega. But it makes all the sense in the world that he would go with the All Elite guys, right?
You would think so. I mean, I hope for wrestling that he goes to All Elite. That's what I would prefer.
Mm-hmm, same.
But at the same time, if he goes to WWE, I understand it.
And I mean, I wouldn't fault him as a performer either way. Like, if he can,
I'll selfishly enjoy what he does. You know, if he. But I think that I would like All Elite to make as big a dent as they can, and I think he is a crucial part of making a big dent. So ideally, I would like it to be that. So, did we talk on yesterday's podcast about the rally next week?
The rally? No.
So, AEW / the Elite.
Oh,
slash
the announcement thing.
So they're going to have the announcement, which is apparently the rumor is that Vegas is going to be where All In 2 / Double or Nothing is going to take place. So I guess maybe
it kind of seems that way given the Double or Nothing branding. I mean, that would make sense, right?
Yeah, and we're going to get maybe like a date or something and that kind of stuff. So, next Tuesday, I guess we're going to find stuff out, but I don't know, wrestling, it's very interesting. Very interesting to be a wrestling fan as of January the 4th. And also, do you know, Chris Jericho, I mean, at 48 years old, like,
crazy motherfucker, right?
Like, he can go.
He can. That match with Naito was amazing.
Controversial. I liked that more than the main event.
Did you really?
Which is insane. But I think it's because it hit to me more as a, you know,
I guess for you it was probably more of a story thing that you could kind of,
yeah,
sink your teeth into.
I find it difficult to do 45 minutes, and I think if I was going to watch 45 minutes, if it was like a, you know, when you get something like the Survivor Series 5-on-5, so you get 10 guys and you get different stories within those 10 guys, but with two people. But then again, I'm watching it as a one-off. I'm not watching it as a regular viewer, so I'm sure regular viewers probably, that was their match. But I thought Jericho and Naito nailed it. I thought it was great. So You know, Jericho's another one. He's 48 years old and, you know, a year ago decided to go and do this New Japan thing, proving that he is clever beyond reproach.
He is such a smart motherfucker, isn't he? Like, it's kind of, it kind of almost drives you insane. Like, he's just, he's very good at betting on Chris Jericho. That's for sure. And it'll be interesting to see what he does now, because, I mean, he's at the point where he kind of knows he commands attention wherever he goes. Like, the Jericho Cruise was a resounding success. So wherever he ends up next, I don't know. It's fascinating.
And Dave Meltzer,
there are so many pieces up in the air with so many things right now. Like, I'm kind of just on tenterhooks for January 8th, like, for the rally, to see what they announce and to see, like, some semblance of, like, direction. I don't know. Like, I'm really excited about it in a good way.
Yeah, and then there's a meeting apparently happening today or tomorrow with All Elite Wrestling, ROH, and New Japan all together.
Oh, really?
To see if they can work together. So, I guess we'll see. We'll see what happens. So we will be back. There's going to be a Patreon review on Sunday involving me and David, maybe more people, for Wrestle Kingdom. Finn and I tomorrow are recording the Power Slam podcast, which will go up on Patreon as well. Also, Impact are doing their pay-per-view on Sunday, which Finn and I are reviewing next week, because Finn is officially a glutton for punishment and makes me watch these shows.
Like, when I look at the roster of Impact, the shows can't be bad, right? Like, they have so many great people there.
I mean, the Impact homecoming card is Ali and Soo Young against Kira Hogan and Jordan Grace. Sammy Callahan.
That should be great. Like, I'm really excited about that. I might actually check it out.
Sammy Callahan versus Willie Mack. Eddie Edwards versus Moose. Abyss versus Eli Drake. LAX against Rey Fénix and Pentagon Jr. An Ultimate X match with Trey Miguel, Rich Swann, Ethan Page, and Jake Crist. Taya Valkyrie against Tessa Blanchard, and Brian Cage versus Johnny Impact.
And it's that, like, card sounds amazing to me.
It sounds really good in terms of wrestling, but there is not one real big name on that.
Like, you and I watch wrestling in very different ways. Like, to me, I'm like, oh, I love Jordan Grace, and I love Tessa Blanchard, and I love Taya Valkyrie, and I love, you know, all of these people. So,
yeah, so I mean, for a lot of, but I mean, I think, you know, Impact, surely to God, we can agree on this. Impact at this point in time should be doing something to pull people in.
Oh, 100%. And doing that is not moving to the Pursuit channel, where you're going to be available in even fewer homes.
Yeah, and they don't have any money, so they, yeah, anyway, it's a whole thing. But regardless,
it's the gasping corpse of Impact Wrestling. I'm just saying, like, I just don't want people to, like, shit on Impact because they think it's going to be, like, a terrible product. Like, the number of wrestlers that they have there that are super, super talented, like, I can't pretend that I'm watching it, so I'm not, like, trying to champion the cause of, like, everybody should watch Impact.
Maybe every week now, you watch Impact, and we'll dedicate 90 seconds to it on the SmackDown Summary for you to just let us know what's going on.
Yeah, I'm going to spend 2 hours of my week for 90 seconds. No. No. Like, I mean, I might check out the pay-per-view now that I know that it's happening, but I'm probably not going to watch all of it. And again, like, that's not an indictment of the performers or even of the company. It's just, like, there's a lot of wrestling to watch. I have to go watch Terry Runnels have a miscarriage, Kenny.
This is true. You do.
It's my actual job. What is life?
So yeah, thank you for listening, everybody. We hope you enjoyed the show. Whose theme song should play us out here?
I think, should we play AJ Styles' theme? Just because he won the match.
Sure. Yeah, why not? We should do that. Okay, so we're gonna play AJ Styles' theme tune. That is gonna be there right now. So yeah, enjoy AJ Styles' theme tune. Thanks for listening to the podcast. Sorry it's a little bit late this week. We'll be back to normal next week, since it's the new year and the build to the Royal Rumble begins. So plug, Sandra. Sorry, on you go.
Okay. Yep. Follow me on Twitter at SandraRuthRW. Follow Kenny on Twitter at KennyMC1985. Follow Inside the Ropes at Inside_the Ropes. Go to patreon.com/InsideTheRopes for all our Patreon content we've been talking about. YouTube.com/InsideTheRopes for tons of interview content, videos. Also, an interview with me and Gene Okerlund is up there right now, and it's really great. One of my favorite interviews from old school Inside the Ropes. InsideTheRopes.co.uk for tickets soon.
Are tickets those going to sale tomorrow for Gold Dust at 3 p.m.
Okay. Sorry, I forgot the details of when that was happening. But yeah, insidetheropes.co.uk for tickets to see Gold Dust, which should be awesome. And I think that is all of the plugs. So enjoy AJ Styles' theme tune, and that's it.
Thanks for listening, everybody. Bye.
Bye.
Rhyme of strength. Ain't nobody man enough to feel the pain. And you can be next. You better give respect. Cause ain't nobody breaking this redneck. No, they don't want none. No, they don't want none. They don't want none. No, they don't want none. They don't want none. No, they don't want none. They looking scared. No, they don't really want none. And I'm a Mack truck. Don't get run over. Place some country boys working overtime, boys. Kings of the South.